down a path that began with lust and ended in the most horrific, most wicked story I think I've ever read in the Bible. He deceived, he betrayed, he murdered, he conspired, he adulterated. All of this progressed from his lust because he saw a woman bathing on a rooftop and wanted her. It began in the mind, but really quickly moved into his actions. And that's the danger with lust. Some people might think it's just a harmless thing to fantasize about somebody, maybe, to look at something online for a few minutes. But that's just the beginning. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the power of lust. Some people also might think, well, I just think of lust as like being involved in all kinds of, you know, orgies or something, or sexual extravaganzas of like all kinds of having boyfriends, sleeping around, that type of lust. But there's a lot more subtler lust that's just as poisonous. You know, God's not impressed if you've never been to a strip club, but yet you make all the dirtiest jokes with your friends. Or God's not impressed if you've never looked at internet porn, but yet you've gone to all those places with somebody in your mind. So lust is not this high and lofty sin like you have to get to the most extreme form of it for it to be detrimental and to harm you and to infect every aspect of your life. It's even the subtle things that lead toward destruction. You know, the same idea is set forth by Jesus and also the Apostle John. Jesus said in Matthew 5, you know, if somebody lusts after a woman in their heart, they've already committed adultery with her. And John says that the person who hates their own brother is a murderer. So just lusting after somebody in your mind, does that mean you've committed adultery with them? No. Just as much as if you hate somebody, does that mean you actually ended their life? No. But they go hand in hand. One leads to the next thing, as King David found out. The idea is that Jesus said, no, if your eye causes you to lust, pluck it out or gouge it out. Better to have one eye than to have two and have one corrupt you. Is he literally saying you're supposed to remove your own eyeball? I mean, we would probably all have no eyeballs. we'd all be blind. But what he's saying is that don't tolerate what kind of leads you into sin. And so we're going to talk a little bit about what happens specifically with the mind and with the eyes, because that seems to be a really difficult thing for a lot of people. I'm going to profess my own difficulty with it for many years. Our culture is inundated with all kinds of visual stimulation geared towards sexual content and other types of temptations like that. Kind of the idea is that with the eyes, with the mind, that if you've conceded to the sin within your heart, then what is stopping you from actually committing it with your hands? You're just waiting for the opportunity. That's the whole point of if you lust after a woman in your heart, you've already committed adultery with her, because what's missing except for the opportunity? So I'm going to talk about how careful we have to be with what we allow to penetrate into our hearts, what we allow into our lives. So aside from the typical, usual understanding of, well, so what's wrong with lust? You know, besides, well, it's bad. Okay, great, I think we all have established that. And the higher forms of lust obviously have all kinds of physical ramifications, sexual transmitted diseases, and the like. But what about lust in your mind, lust in your heart? Well, Paul talks about that those who are in the flesh or those who are living according to their sin cannot please God. There's an aspect of being involved in lust that actually is spiritually oppressive to you. And I can say that I didn't really recognize such a detriment at the time. Years ago. It was not that I saw an immediate effect and a dampering of my spiritual walk. But looking back, it was all over the place. Usually we can never really see what's going on until we see it in hindsight. Because they always say hindsight's 20/20. You look back and you're like, I should have known better. You know, but in the time when you're doing it, from the time you're involved, you may be blinded by it. So the idea of trying to fight lust and battle lust is one of doing what's right. But it's also of if you want to seek God, if you want to draw closer to God, that's being hampered. There's obstacles that you're putting in your way to that objective by engaging in lustful behaviors with your body or your mind. The danger with lust is that it's something in our culture that there's no civil law against, like there are other sins. It's illegal to kill somebody, you know? It's illegal to assault someone. You know, it's illegal to enslave someone. It's not illegal to lust after someone. Our culture actually promotes it. And everywhere else in the world, sometimes it's even more promoted than it is in America. We're actually kind of conservative compared to some places. So what that means is that there is no restriction in our culture against it besides the one that we, as God's people, would place on ourselves. Lust is something that will take you prisoner if you let it. I want to liken this to a movie because the parallels are so striking. Does anybody here know who Pinocchio is? For real? Well, I don't know if anybody's seen the movie Pinocchio, but in the movie Pinocchio, Pinocchio is going to school one day, and he gets stopped by Mr. Foulfellow. It's like a fox, right? He gets stopped, and he got hired to basically kidnap Pinocchio, or not kidnap him, convince him to come with him, and he does it by taking some vital signs, like he's a fake doctor, and making a diagnosis about him. And what he says is, aha! You're allergic, and the only cure for you is Pleasure Island. And so Pinocchio is like, no, I have to go to school. But he's like, no, everything will be fine. You just need to go to Pleasure Island. And Pinocchio is putting up a fight to try to say that he wants to do what he's supposed to, is go to school, which is what the Blue Fairy told him to do. But Foulfellow hands him an invitation, which this is the Ace of Spades card, and says, here's your invitation, come with me. And he gets coaxed into going to Pleasure Island, which on Pleasure Island is basically this place that has no rules. You can do whatever you want. It promotes destruction, all kinds of havoc, kids smoking. Actually, Pinocchio is one of the darkest Disney films ever made. And ironically enough, there's a scene when they're on the Pleasure Island. Pinocchio has an axe, and he is chopping at this dresser made of wood, and he's a wooden toy. There's a little irony there. Yeah. And his friend says, so what do you think, you know, about Pleasure Island? And Pinocchio, in the middle of his hacking, stops and looks, and he's like, yeah, it's fun to be bad. Isn't that so much like lust? If you've ever experienced, really, or indulged in it, when you're not involved in it, you're like, that's bad stuff. But once you're involved in it, you don't really think it's all that bad, do you? The sin has a hold of you, and you're enjoying it. And that is what is the problem with lust. It is an enslaver of which once you accept the invitation to just dabble in it, you will get sucked in. I'm going to talk a little bit about some science behind some of the stuff that happens. We're going to talk about a lot of things like psychology, sociology, physiology, theology. I like all of it. But we're going to talk about kind of what happens? Why do we feel that way when we get involved in lust? Or how does lust bait us into pursuing it? The battle's real, and it's something that happens all around us, but it happens within our minds. The enemy knows how to attack us, and he knows each of our weaknesses. He knows what they call in the psychology terms of our triggers. The things that when we see, we just take a step toward it. And then we take another step toward it. And before we know it, we've crossed the line that we said we'd never cross. We are not helpless against it. We're going to look a little bit at what Paul writes in the book of Romans. But something that he also writes to the Corinthians in chapter 10, 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, it reads, "The temptations in your life are no different from what others experience. And God is faithful. He will not allow the temptation to be more than you can stand. When you are tempted, he will show you a way out so that you can endure." One thing about sin, specifically lust, is it has really no power. We're going to talk about the power of sin that has been broken in Christ. So whatever power sin has in our lives, it's voluntary. We enable the sin by our own actions. If we're not prepared to fight the battle, the enemy will cause all the destruction that he can. And sin is a vicious enemy, and the devil knows how to use it. The one thing that I found is that, I'd probably be in this category too, is that people who are involved in lust, is that they're not like just full addicts. There are people who are fully addicted to it, just like there are people who are fully addicted to gambling, to alcohol, to prostitution, to all kinds of other stuff. There are these people who are partially involved or who dabble in it here and there when the triggers happen. They call them fractional addicts. And for the most part, people are fractional addicts. Fractional addiction is basically like trying to just have a snack to hold you over because the urges get too strong or because the temptation is just too sweet. It's like taking a nibble or two of a cookie in order just to get your desire for dessert out of your system for the time being. The issue with that, though, is that typically one bite is never enough. It's a very slippery slope once you start down it. Lust takes something good that may not seem so bad at the time, but it takes something good and it warps into something very harmful. Men take sexual fantasies and they objectify them and remove the intimacy from them. Women take romantic fantasies, objectify them, and make them devoid of any real relationship. Men and women are very different in the way that lust plays out in their lives. Compared to men, women don't struggle so much with visual lust. Men, that's the primary thing that they fight against, and of which our media and our culture is so proliferated with. Women struggle with emotional lust, but guys don't have that type of struggle as much. There is some overlap, but when men and women struggle with lust very differently, and I can really only speak for the male perspective. But the thing that we need to know about is whether or not we're at a place where we're ready to stand up and fight against lust. There was many years of my life where I'd say I wanted to fight. I wasn't really serious about it. I liked the idea of being righteous, of doing what was right in God's eyes. But then when it came, when the rubber hit the road, when it came time to withstanding the temptation, caving was all too easy. It wasn't that hard to justify a small little slip up. I'll just do better next time. We always seem to just find reasons to justify our actions, don't we? That's part of our sin nature as well, is not really owning up to our own problem. But I'll kind of talk about that. People will never really win the victory over lust until they're ready to fight. And not just in their mind, like, think, yeah, I don't like that. I want to, you know, end that. I mean, get to the point where it is a disgusting, nauseating thing to you. So the issue is that no matter which way lust plays out in a man or woman's life, they're both living a lie with the way they objectify relationships and sexual encounters and things like that. They're both lies because they're both distortions of the way that God designed sexuality. And what they are us trying to find fulfillment that we want in our own way apart from God. It's basically us, like I said, it's sexual atheism. It's basically taking us, pursuing our desires in ways that we think we want, regardless of what God says is good for us. And it really comes down to, we've already, you know, played out the right and wrong. I don't think anybody's questioning that here. It's about what type of behaviors are healthy. What type of behaviors are good? What type of behaviors will end up resulting in true fulfillment and deep satisfaction? Not the fleeting temporal kind that comes from a quick high with sexual gratification that is apart from the type of intimacy and union that God has designed for two souls who become one flesh to enjoy. So why is lust so hard then sometimes to avoid? Why do we find ourselves sometimes, for those who struggle with it or have ever struggled with it, why do you find the battle so hard sometimes? Well, the thing is that lust, like a lot of other types of desires in our life, is heavily attached to hormones, of which we all have them. Sexual, like I said, we talked about at the beginning, sexual desire is something natural that God designed. However, when you indulge in lust, the chemical pathways in your body get hijacked and rewired. There's a place in your mind where you make your conscious moral decisions called your prefrontal cortex. It's kind of where you, when you see two choices, A and B, you choose one or the other based upon whatever type of criteria you've built into your cognitive abilities. For somebody who would be like, well, I want to do what pleases God, it's then, is this pleasing to God or is this pleasing to God? The issue is that when you make a choice, and if that choice is associated with a hormonal response, such as a dopamine high, you form a new pathway in your mind. Our brains have this awesome capacity to do what's called neuroplasticity. It's the ability to mold and morph according to our experiences. And when the prefrontal cortex makes a decision, it goes into a place in your brain, the nucleus accumbens, which is part of your vestal striatum. I don't know if you need to go into these details. But basically, you form a pathway there. And the more that you choose to involve yourself in lust, the more you strengthen that pathway. And you get to the point in your life when you strengthen a pathway that it becomes second nature, automatic. How can you do multiple things at the same time? It's because you have enforced those pathways that you don't require yourself to consciously make every single little choice. Your brain does it automatically for you. And so the danger with lust is that when it forms these pathways, and you get a dopamine release, and you feel really good. It's like a chemical high. And it's the same problem people have with gambling, the same problem people have with substance abuse, because the narcotics cause the dopamine release, which makes you feel euphoric. It's the same thing that happens in an orgasm. You get this dopamine release that makes you feel really good. And that dopamine release reinforces that pathway. And if it's a bad pathway, you build a bad habit. And so what happens then, though, is that the triggers, you get what's called a pre-dopamine release. When you see the trigger, you don't even need to indulge in the lust to begin to get the taste of it. That is why lust is so enticing. It's because we already are conditioned a lot of times to understand that that thought or that fantasy or that action is going to produce that good feeling. And so the real detriment is that there's a feedback loop that then affects our prefrontal cortex. And scientifically, it's been proven that the pre-dopamine release compromises our ability to make moral judgments. And so the snare of lust is not just committing a sin one time. It's this type of building a pattern that then becomes a lifestyle and can become automatic if you let it. There are guys that I have counseled who cannot control what they think when they're at the beach. And that's because of a reinforced neurological pathway. The good news is that those can be undone, but they take time. They take a person being willing to fight, to stand against the sin. The eyes and the mind and the trigger points, they just increase the contamination of lust in our lives. And a lot of times, lust, for guys, deals with a lot of visual stimulation, such as pornography. And I'm going to talk just a little bit about this, because this is the main place where guys struggle. And in our culture, it's so accessible. Any digital device now can get you in touch with it at your fingertips. A couple strokes on the keyboard. The problem is that what lust does, and the way it objectifies sex, is it makes it completely unrealistic. Pornography depicts sex as realistically as a puppet show depicts real life. And the issue that that then results in is we get false conceptions of what sexual intimacy is supposed to be like. We develop false conceptions of how we're supposed to operate with the other sex, the way that God designed us to. It basically redesigns our blueprint in our mind for what we think should happen, and there again, we dethrone God in our lives. In the worst cases, lust, especially with pornography, causes all kinds of desensitization as well to normal modes of arousal. The things that typically people should enjoy don't become as stimulating anymore. Lust puts you in a position to want to have something abnormal. And therefore, if you're a single person, you're involved in lust. When you ever, or if you ever, get involved with somebody, it will affect your relationship. And you may not see the effects of lust in your life right now, but when you do, I guarantee you will. You'll see them come out, and they'll come out with a vengeance. They will come out, and you will be handicapped in that relationship, or you'll harm the other person, physically, mentally, verbally, spiritually. So lust is really not just about you necessarily. There is always somebody who pays the price. And you may not think it's you at the time, because it might seem harmless to you to just look on the internet a couple minutes every few days to get your fix. But I guarantee you, somebody's paying the price, whether it's you at that time, your future family, or the person who you objectify on the screen. Where do you think human trafficking comes from? Where do you think prostitution comes from? When you indulge in lust through pornography, you endorse that behavior. That's something that really never clicked with me in the early years. I didn't think about where it came from. I didn't think about what I was endorsing. I didn't think about the people who I was looking at. I was just thinking about gratifying myself. But when you start thinking about that, maybe you start thinking about how disgusting it really is. Maybe you start thinking about who you're hurting by it. I did. That's what began my path toward victory, is realizing what it was for what it really was. Now, if somebody is really intent on fighting against lust, people have done the route of what's called making contracts to try to not indulge in it or engage in it anymore. But the problem is that contracts will never solve the problem. I didn't start my timer. What time is it? Is that the wrap it up sign? I'm going to talk about this, I guess, and then I'll end. It's the problem with having too much to say, I guess. So contracts will never solve the problem, because rules don't change who you are. By knowing the rule, by making a rule, you're no different than before you had the rule. So I could talk a lot about how people have tried to make all kinds of contracts with friends. You don't look at it, I won't look at it. If you do, then we both put money in a jar, we both fast, we both do some type of a consequence. Those programs are dependent upon our self-will, and that self-will will never be effective. I wanted to read some of the stuff from Romans chapter 7, where Paul talks about he wants to do something good, but he can't, and things he doesn't want to do, he does. He's ashamed of all that, because sin is controlling him. There is nothing in himself that he found able to fight against sin. It was only through the power of his connection with Christ. It was only the power of Christ in his life that broke the power of sin, that sin no longer has control over him, that he can not be a slave to it. But the funny thing is that he's not a slave to sin anymore, but now he's a slave to God. So the idea of being free is that we're really not free. We're just free from sin. And we're free to now to worship. We're free to serve. We're free to live life God's way. I guess in closing, I want to read, Romans 13. We read this twice already this weekend. I'm going to read from here, starting in verse 11. This is all the more urgent, for you know how late it is. Time is running out. Wake up, for our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is almost gone. The day of salvation will soon be here. So remove your dark deeds like dirty clothing and put on the shining armor of right living, because we belong to the day. We must live decent lives for all to see. So don't participate in the darkness of wild parties and drunkenness, or in sexual promiscuity and immoral lifestyles, or in quarreling and jealousy. Instead, clothe yourself with the presence of the Lord Jesus Christ, and don't let yourself think about ways to indulge in your evil desires. So I just want to offer myself, if anybody is involved in lust, anybody needs help with lust, if anybody is ready to start the battle against lust, I'm more than willing to help you. I have lots of resources. I've counseled several people to help them. And if you need help, I'm willing to be your help or to help you find help. So see me afterward. I'll exchange contact information with you. If you want to be private, you can send me a message at jerry.weirwill@gmail.com, or there's a lot of people here who know me at the church. You can get in contact with me that way as well. So thanks for listening. That's what I had to share.